imposter is not to be injured. Use minimum force. Repeat.
I'm
the imposter is not to be injured.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
Welcome back to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I am Terry, and I am joined, as always, by Derek.
Hello.
And by Graham.
Hello.
Chaps, it seems like ages since we were last here.
And it actually really does.
It really does.
It proper does.
Because it was.
Yeah.
I think it was May, perhaps, or even April that we did our last podcast. Okay. We're recording this in July.
It's a big season break,
we took a season break, but it's customary, because we've now, in fact, the last 2 years, I think we're doing this is our third year of doing these podcasts.
Wow.
Believe it or not. We usually take a break in the summertime. But actually, it's still summertime, and we're back.
Yeah.
Recording two back-to-back episodes for your pleasure and delight, dear listener. And, we're going to start with a favourite of ours that we've been putting off for some time. So is it a favourite of ours? I don't know. It's The Enemy Within, episode 5 from series 1, very early episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
An interesting episode, wouldn't you say, Graham?
Very, very, yeah. It's one of the most famous episodes, but that doesn't necessarily make it one of the best ones.
Hmm.
There are themes in it that are perhaps remembered by people who don't particularly have that much interest in Star Trek. If you ask them to think of an episode of Star Trek, this is probably one of them that they'll remember.
Mm.
The subjects in it have been repeated. I mean, it's not an original subject by the time it gets to the original series anyway, but it has been taken from here and used in other TV series. The idea of an evil twin turning up is a bit of a trope, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's done very, very, very well.
Yeah, it is done quite well, isn't it, Derek? It's a transporter accident, and it results in two dogs being transported up.
Are they dogs?
But also, well, they're space dogs, I suppose.
Pity the poor animal.
Two space dogs get transported up. Well, one space dog splits into two, one bad and one evil side, one good and one evil
How
side.
How do you know it's an evil
well,
dog?
Well, I mean, if you could... This, you can have thing. A metaphysical argument about the nature of good and evil and whether it applies to dogs or whether it applies only to sentient creatures. But I'm not certain that was one of the themes.
Okay.
But it turns out Kirk is separated. There's two of him. And there's good Kirk or benign Kirk, and then there's evil Kirk.
This is the thing. It's not actually evil Kirk.
You don't think he's evil Kirk?
No, if you look at it properly, it's not against good and evil. It's actually to do with passion. You have like one side, the sort of more passionate, the more sort of like what's the word? Sort of like
it's the id.
That's the word.
It's the id.
It's the id from Forbidden Planet.
No, right.
You know, you've basically taken one person's psyche and split it into the more sort of passive and the sort of more
the higher functions, isn't it? Yeah. It's higher brain.
So it's actually not good and evil.
Mm.
You know, it's actually just two parts of the same person that split. And that's obviously the thing is, as we go through the actual story, you've got the thing with the really troubling bit, as we see it now, with the Rand sort of situation, with the passion of the bad Kirk, or maybe we call him Tiberius T. So he's the Tiberius sort of side, and you have James.
Mm.
You know, and
oh, nice.
You know, but it's the same. It's the same old story. Obviously, it's based because Richard Matheson, who wrote this, he based it on, of course, Robert Louis Stevenson's
Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah,
you know, which again, that wasn't the good and evil thing. It was actually the primal sort of id and the sort of the logical sort of or more emotional sort of doctor.
Yeah.
Dr. Jekyll and the sort of like the two points where they're trying to take over each other.
Yeah.
And you have the same thing here. You have this battle between the two characters, the two parts of Kirk's psyche battling.
Yeah.
But without each other, they're both also diminished because they're both sort of, one's dying. and the other one is on his way to dying as well, which you find out later on.
No, they can't function. Why do you suppose they can't function together, Graham? What is it that, I mean, is it, that's not really something that's explained, I don't think. It's made clear in the script that they can't function together and that they're likely to perish if they're, unless they're reunited. But why do you suppose they're unable to live separately?
Well, beyond for the sake of storytelling.
I mean, beyond the fact that they have another episode next week and they want to move on. So, yeah.
I think it's a good plot device because it does keep the tension going, much like the having the away team stuck down on the planet. That sets the clock ticking, doesn't it, on what they've got anyway. So you've got two things that where there is a countdown going on at the same time, two countdowns going on, so which does add to the tension. And whether or not you find that believable or not is...
Do you think they needed that additional plot device? Do you think maybe the idea of saying, well, like maybe the original premise was, look, we have to reunite the two Kirks, otherwise they'll die, but they weren't able to convey that to the audience in a way that would introduce sufficient peril.
So I think
subplot with some guys on a planet who are stuck down there. So if we don't solve this problem, then those guys are going to die or they're going to get beamed up as...
I mean, I think the thing about the away team being down on the planet is... where you see the absence of Kirk, of normal Kirk.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he would be the one sort of like trying to get out there or trying to sort out much better solutions than what they have actually done. Because where you've got the two dogs and the two Kirks not functioning properly, any mechanical object that goes through the transporter also doesn't function. They're completely useless. Two versions of a useless machine. And so that gives you the idea of where the storyteller is coming from and say why these two people can't work, because there's obviously bits that are missing or not working properly. You could have said, well, actually, this guy's actually got using just one half of his brain, and this guy's only using the other half of his brain, or
you see
the front half or the back half, or something like that.
You see a perfect example of that with Kirk when obviously Spock is trying to get him to act in a captainly manner, and you know, the James part, you know, the sort of more, you know, he becomes quite lethargic, he doesn't make any decisions, and then you've got the Tiberius Kirk when he takes over. Right near the end, where he basically says, "Bugger those down on the planet. Let's just sod off," you know. And he wants, so both of them aren't proper captain material because they're not together.
Yeah, you know? So the what's missing from Tiberius is compassion.
Yeah,
and it suggested the intelligence as well. Although I don't know whether or not that is quite the case.
Maybe it's to do with impulsive.
There's a nice scene between McCoy and Kirk, isn't there? Yeah. I think that there's the this episode, I think, is important because it's one of the first episodes that establishes the trio of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and Spock is coming at James with a, you know, with the imperatives like you have to do this, you've got to be like the captain, and McCoy, I think, is sort of like trying to help James through what's a difficult period. And there's a very nice conversation that they have in the sick bay, isn't there, which I appreciated, and in that I think he said you have the intelligence, you know, and the compassion. But I think that Tiberius probably had some intelligence about him as well. He knew what he was doing, he knew what he was doing. He knew how to evade capture, for example.
You know. I mean, this was, as well as, it's an early episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is the one that's actually building up a lot of things that we see later on, you know, as the writers get more familiar with it. And we see that sort of, the Enterprise itself. We see also the camaraderie ship between the rest of the crew as well. Because actually, it seems to be quite a together ship as well. Because you've got like down, even though Sulu is down with the guys down at the bottom that have been, you know, that they're stuck down there. They actually still trying to keep the spirits up and some of this, and you actually have a really good bit with Sulu where he's trying to crack quite a few jokes. But it's funny because it does seem to be sort of like quite a good functioning ship, except for the new, you know, the new Kirk with, you know, the time.
Well, we've seen this, haven't we? We've seen this with Charlie X, and we saw it with Noen, also with the Mantrap as well. Yeah. We talked about it in our Charlie X episode about how there was more of an ensemble feel to the Enterprise crew in those early episodes. And in fact, the show became more concentrated on Kirk, Spock, McCoy as it went on. But in the early stages.
Yeah, we're seeing this is almost the crossroads, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Where you see that happening. I mean, you this is the first He's Dead Jim.
Yep.
And the first neck pinch as well.
And the first neck pinch.
But he didn't say it about a human being.
No, he didn't. No, but the way he delivers it, it makes you feel like, oh God, I'm going to have to say this every week, aren't I?
Yeah. I say, this is a good line. And they've gone, well done, Dee. That's a great delivery. Okay. Let's use that again.
Okay, I want to say, what did Scotty have in his hair? Like ghee or something? Because he was so bloody greasy. Did you notice that?
I think he really copped up.
Yeah. Or maybe all the booze are gone. You see, because like, you know, Tiberius had drunk it all. Now he had the DTs afterwards.
Let's just talk, on Tiberius and... Firstly, Shatner's performance and the interpretation of that, and then we'll move on to some of the more troublesome aspects of the episode involving Tiberius. There's parts of this where Tiberius has become a meme, hasn't he? If you like your social media and you like your GIFs, then you will, you know, the Tiberius, particularly where he smacks the monitor and does the whole, I'm Captain Kirk. it's quite a popular thing. But I mean, it is an extraordinary amount of scenery destruction going on there in that moment.
And lighting.
The lighting is again, characteristic of those early episodes. And it works really well. Did they flip the...
They mistakenly did it because the scratches changed sides, didn't they?
Right. Okay. Right.
And that was basically done by the director, just because otherwise he would have been facing the other way.
Yeah.
And so both, when you're cutting between them, you need the two antagonists facing different directions.
Yeah. Sure.
So but when it was filmed, it was filmed that they were both looking the same way.
But it looks really nice though. Because if you look at the lighting of it... Actually.
Oh, no, the lighting of it is great. And so if you ignore the fact that the scratches down the face...
Yeah, but I believe we can all live with that.
Yeah, yeah. And they didn't change that for the remastered ones. So.
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right.
They could have totally done that.
They could have done that, but they said... No, I mean, I think that's good judgment for the remastered ones, isn't it? It's like that Man with the Golden Gun scene, isn't it? With the fight scene where you can see... the camera crew in the reflection in the mirror.
Yeah.
And when they came to remaster them, they said, we could get rid of that. I said, no, it's there. Keep it in.
Because there were a couple of bloopers, well, continuity things that they could have done. Because I think when Kirk arrives back through the transporter, he hasn't got any insignia on his tunic.
Yeah, and that's right.
But also as well, when they're on the bridge, when there's a scene from the back of the bridge, and you're looking at the screen, and the screen's just plain white.
Oh right,
and
yeah,
that remains in the remastered version.
Funny,
I kind of assumed that the screen was off. You know, that they turned it off.
That's what I thought as well.
Yeah, I just kind of assumed.
Well, just what it always looks.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, that's what it looks like when they do, and they only switch it on every now and then because you know it takes up power. You know.
It's on power save mode.
I'm down to 15%. Yeah, so I'll turn the screen off.
Yeah, someone put it into the USB charger.
I know where it is. I mean, otherwise, mind you, it's not going to have screen burn, is it? Because it's permanently on Starfield, isn't it?
Yeah.
I used to have a screensaver, which was a Star Trek one, and it was brilliant. And it did actually cause screen burn, funny enough, on my own monitor because I had it on so long. I used to love it. I mean, it was brilliant. This is going back years ago.
Yeah. That's because you never did any work.
3.11 was amazing, wasn't it? For that.
Shatner's there's a lot of overacting and overegging. Do you think that that's an element of it that maybe doesn't so much translate to if we were to do a story like that now? Do you think there'd be a little bit more nuance to that? Do you think it would be quite so dramatic, shall we say?
We've sort of had that recently with the Mirror Universe and Discovery.
Yeah, and I think when you see episodes like this nowadays, it's not just one character. Yeah.
No.
I think if this would have been even a next gen one, it would have been two or three of them all happening, changing like this.
Mm.
They do this quite a lot in the TOS with flipping characters around.
Mm.
We've discussed them on the show, but I think what actually this episode reminds me most of, and you can look at Mirror, but actually it's something like Turnabout Intruder.
Mm.
which we don't like to talk about because it's a hideous a hideous episode. It's a terrible episode, and it's really misogynist.
Yeah.
So is this one.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to that. Let's talk about that. Get out of the way. I mean, there's. I said get that out of the way. I don't mean it like that. This needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, Tiberius, on his way walking through the corridors with his bottle of Xarian brandy that he's procured from sick bay, goes into finds Janice Rand's cabin and waits for her, and then attempts to rape her.
Yeah,
basically. Now, I mean, in that, I think that scene in the whole, with the context that we have here, or that we're beginning to understand that there's another Kirk, to all intents and purposes, from the audience's point of view, it's an evil Kirk, although we accept that as the story develops, it becomes a bit less straightforward. But so I think we can understand how that scene plays out, that this is a shocking scene designed to shock people, and I suspect probably did shock people. Mm. And I imagine that the networks looked at that and went, this is pretty risky. But I think that where things go wrong is how Janice is treated afterwards.
Yeah.
The fact that she's being compelled to discuss what happened, not just sort of like in an relatively uncontrolled environment, but also in front of her accuser as well. I think he's
standing over her.
Standing over her. And there's this three, and there's that one scene where you've got Kirk, Spock and McCoy, and they're all standing over this weeping Janice, you know, demanding some kind of explanation.
It's no wonder she got off that ship, isn't it, really?
And it's no wonder she got off that ship.
It explains a lot, doesn't it?
I mean, I think that unfortunately that's probably something that a lot of women would probably tell you is not an uncommon experience.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I don't think it was delivered in such a way as to convey any sympathy from Janice's point of view, as to convey just how wrong that situation is. I don't think it was like that at all. I think it was delivered differently. And my other opinion, of course, is Spock's wisecrack at the end of the episode,
ouch,
which is, you know, in extremely poor taste, and is an aspect of Spock's character that you know, I think has been left behind, shall we say, in the greatness of this character. I mean, it's not the only misogynistic thing that Spock has said that in early episodes.
Actually, throughout the whole of that first of TOS, there is peppered amongst it. Where people, it's quite a few people I've read online who are of the opinion that when you say if you call Kirk a misogynist, you've got to look at Spock because he's far worse.
Yeah, I've read, I've heard feminist arguments to say that actually Kirk is not a misogynist, and he's actually liberator. I mean, okay, fair enough. He tends to bed a lot of the women that he encounters, but he can, he does encourage them to become liberated, in a very 60s ham-fisted way.
Mm. Yeah.
But returning to this particular sort of like instance, you know, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but I think that that was extremely badly handled, even for the time.
I did read one review of it, and it pretty much said that this is the most Kirk/Spock incident in the whole thing, because he's almost saying it like as if he's jealous.
Mm.
That's probably, I mean, it,
as if he wanted to be in her position.
I hadn't considered that, but yeah, that's interesting.
If you look at it like that, then all of a sudden it makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Well, this is one of those episodes where you have Kirk with his top off again, you know, where he's sort of like
yeah,
obviously I think it's in the first series you have more of that.
Charlie X,
because obviously you know, later on, like Shatner, like the rest of us, sort of gets a bit
goes the way of all middle-aged men.
You know, sort of like, but in the early episodes, obviously there was a lot of the beefcake from that sort of thing. And I also think back when I was a kid, my best mate at the time, his mum was obsessed by William Shatner and used to have a massive poster of Kirk up on her in her bedroom.
Oh, really?
You know, and I know that he was obviously a big sort of sex symbol at the time, but you have that bit with, as you say, about Kirk and Spock and the slash fiction stuff. It's brilliant. I think that's a great thing to sort of point out, actually. Mm. Sort of, you know, it sort of puts them in a different light in this all this misogyny.
Yeah, and Spock, there's no question that Spock, as far as he's concerned, he doesn't I mean, when he's confronted with the with the reality of the situation that Janice Rand has just been attacked, the captain has just attempted to rape her, and his explanation therefore is that there's an imposter on board.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, you're not willing to entertain the fact that actually you're not. You're willing, the least likely explanation.
Yeah,
it's like, how did the Egyptians build the pyramids? We don't understand how they did it. Therefore, it must have been aliens that did it. It's not forgotten knowledge. No, it's aliens.
Definitely
let's
aliens.
Let's go for the stupidest possible explanation.
Yeah, and just then, so happens that the stupidest possible answer actually is the right one.
It's definitely aliens. No, it's not. It's definitely in this. Yes, and of course, in this instance, it is. And editorially, the audience is left in no doubt. And of course, we know the truth. The audience knows the truth.
Yeah.
And so we're able to reinforce
but
that.
The thing is,
does that save this sort of like situation? The fact that we know the truth, or
yeah,
or not?
Definitely, no. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it does get it. We do have to get the story going quite quickly here, and as well, they really go for the farm with Evil Kirk quite early on, don't they? The first thing he does, get some booze. Right, now I'm going straight to Janice's quarters.
I'm going to get some booze and I'm going to get laid.
And so he does not hang around. And so the story doesn't hang around.
No.
So he doesn't, there isn't like this whole sort of thing of him wrecking havoc in a subtle way and building up to these horrible acts. He just goes bang straight for it.
And he nearly kills a guy as well. And it gets quite...
Oh, he's savage. I mean, he is absolutely savage. And duplicitous, and just and you know, frankly, I know you said not, but you know, pretty damn evil. What would have been really interesting is if they had had that scene with Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Janice, and written it in such a way of gone right. Actually, we'll start here. We'll go to the cold open with this scene, and then we'll tell the story. Then we'll go back and tell the story. I think a modern storyteller would have done that differently, and then the audience would have been like, "What is going on?" And then it would have been like, "Well, you know." 6 hours earlier and stuff like that, but they didn't tell stories like that back then, I don't think so.
Well, no, but it's amazing how this is in this episode, and yet it is still so fondly remembered. This isn't another Wolf in the Fold, is it?
No.
Although that
is a fondly remembered episode as well, even though we trashed it, and rightly so. It doesn't deserve to be. But there's aspects of Enemy Within which I enjoy watching Enemy Within, even though this, as I've got older and older and I've become to realise it. When I was a kid, it was, I didn't really know, because you were just a kid. But, I mean, now you just think, God, every time you watch it, you think, you know, you're like looking at it through a pillow. It's really quite cringeworthy. Nevertheless, I still watch this episode. And I do kind
because
of
there's
enjoy
still
it.
A lot to like in it.
Yeah.
And it is more a sort of a philosophical thing, really, isn't it?
Yes.
And that's the questions it's really asking.
Yeah.
With Wolf in the Fold, that's all about sexual violence. Yeah. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
And there's no escape from
it
in any other story.
How sexual violence is fun and entertaining.
With this one, the sexual violence is there because this is a facet of Evil Kirk.
Yes.
And this is something that is within normal Kirk.
Yeah.
So this is by what they're saying is that this is something that's in men and men have to control.
Yes, exactly.
Which is in some ways, this is something that we should be looking at and discussing and
yes.
I mean, they mentioned...
And it's done in a ham-fisted way.
It's not handled very well.
No,
but I mean, but nevertheless, it is done quite well. I mean, Richard Matheson's the writer of this. I mean, probably, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the first draft maybe had this scene maybe a bit more finesse because he's a more skillful writer. But it's probably an issue with translating this kind of stuff onto the
I wouldn't be surprised if that Spock line at the end was just a Roddenberry
rewrite.
I think there's a lot of Roddenberry in this because the thing is, the original script by Matheson didn't actually have the second peer story with Sulu and the guys down the bottom.
It's so
all to do with the two Kirks.
Yeah, which as we said earlier, is an important part because it does give you that
as
second
the extra
bit
peril.
Of
but Matheson's quite interesting because he is a contemporary of Robert Bloch as well, and he was saying that The Wolf in the Fold, that's
Wolf
his
Fold.
Episode. I think that they've come from the same sort of area, sort of like of previous fiction, you know, and they have, you know, their styles are contemporary to each other.
Yeah.
You know, obviously worked on the same sort of shows like the Twilight Zone, yep. and you know, and so on, and obviously Men of the Time, and so their opinions when telling stories obviously reflects the world that they lived in at that time, and obviously the things with the way women were treated or the way, you know, drama, also how they use characters within drama, and obviously the thing with the sexual violence stuff in this, obviously it's a great piece of you know, drama to actually get this.
Yeah, yeah.
Shock,
I mean, we're not left in any doubt whatsoever about the character of Tiberius, or yeah. you know, as the evil Kirk.
Yeah,
I mean, it is very, very blatant. It's just the way that it was handled afterwards.
Sure.
There's another. This also allows us, or the writers, also the opportunity to expand Spock's character in a more positive way, and that is when he explains about how he is half human, half mm-hmm. Vulcan, and how the two conflict mm. within him, and he's living this kind of conflict within him all the time, which I think is quite personal and quite an interesting, just a little element to there to sort of it helps us to understand Spock, takes the character on a bit more, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I believe Leonard Nimoy obviously had a lot to do with obviously this sort of part of the story,
mm.
and obviously the nerve pinch as well, the first time they used that.
Yeah, yes.
So remind me, when is the nerve? Oh, that's when.
Yeah,
yeah. Does that, now that's used in the Naked Time, I'm sure. Is
well,
that before or after?
After that. That's
is it
after? This
right.
is the first time, because
so this is the first
in
time?
The script he was asked to knock Kirk out.
Oh right,
yeah,
and he's
using
one
phaser, I just think. Yeah, slug him with the phaser. Yeah.
And Spock went, "Yeah, he wouldn't do that."
Yeah,
and yeah, basically, I guess he's probably right. Yeah.
So he's obviously Leonard Nimoy is having a bit more of a say in how he's actually doing his character in this, and obviously probably part of that.
Okay.
You know.
Richard Matheson's got some excellent writing credits.
Yeah,
Well,
please do share
well,
those.
Well, it's obviously a lot of his work was from on Twilight Zone beforehand as well, which he did the very famous William Shatner episode.
Yep, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, wasn't it? Yeah.
Which I watched on the plane to Vancouver, actually.
Did you really?
What a great film to watch on a plane. Pit and the Pendulum is another one of his as well.
Okay.
Oh, is that Corman?
Matheson. That's
no, like, but you know, was it the film that Corman directed?
There is a Roger Corman Pit in the Pendulum with Vincent Price. Is that the one?
Yes, 1961.
Oh, it is. Well, there's a nice connection, actually.
Yeah. And Incredible Shrinking Man as well.
Yes, I remember
that's
that.
That's Richard Matheson.
Mm-hmm.
Duel, 1971.
Spielberg.
Very early Spielberg.
Written
TV
by Richard
movie.
Matheson.
Yeah.
Yes.
No shit.
Wrote the book and wrote the screenplay.
And wrote the screenplay as well. Now, goodness, the listeners, if you haven't seen Duel, then seek it out. It is a masterpiece.
But, of course, the pinnacle of it is Jaws 3D.
Jaws 3D was written? No.
Yes.
Come on.
Oh, sorry. So, shall I left that one off?
I remember seeing that in Streatham.
I saw that. But did I go ABC? See you with that with you?
No, that was the same summer as Octopussy and Never Say Never Again.
Was it really?
It? Yeah,
was
I think
it
so.
A good grief.
That was been about eight.
That film honked.
Yeah.
Honkish.
Yeah. You
Such
saw it in 3D
a terrible
as well?
Film. I saw it in 3D at the Pearly Astoria. I must have gone with Chris. Yeah. It was. but it was a bit gimmicky, obviously, because of the 3D.
Oh, well,
the seven hand, so bad, and the harpoon. He's like, no, piss off.
Who was it? Simon McCorkendale was in it, rather than
Roy
Scheider. Roy Scheider only did Jaws 2 because he was contractually obliged to do so.
he got
his ass out of there before.
Actually, Jaws 2 wasn't bad.
Oh, let's have we'll have this conversation.
We're not going to have an hour's worth of podcast.
Going back to Matheson, you forgot the four versions of I Am Legend.
I Am Legend.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah. Well, he wrote the book.
He wrote the book of I Am Legend. Omega Man and indeed I Am Legend. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't discuss Richard Matheson in our musings on our New Wave podcast, which perhaps was an omission. We should have done. So I will tag this episode as New Wave as well.
Yeah, it's actually a New Wave story, isn't it?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, it's metaphysical, and it's getting to the to grips with the nature of of man, I suppose.
Yeah,
and of men.
Yeah,
and there are some, you know, it posits some extremely uncomfortable truths about men. I mean, and about how Kirk, who would not be the great leader that he is if there wasn't a savage, drunken rapist inside him.
God.
And that is, I mean, that's not a comfortable thing for any man to really consider.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are many women who would say, well, get used to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some value in this tale. I just think that it's just in some places not very skillfully handled. I did want to mention the score, if that's all right, chaps.
Oh, yes, tell me. Yeah.
It's an original score. It's composed by Sol Kaplan, and it was used, you know, extensively throughout.
Yeah, season there's
one.
So many pieces.
Up. I mean, like it's used. It's essentially also used in The Devil in the Dark. Virtually the entire Devil in the Dark score is from The Enemy Within.
Well, it's that drum sequence.
Dum 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 dum.
Yeah, which is used. Yeah, which is so.
Dum-dum-dum-dum. Every time you've got a moment of high drama, they go to that, you know, or revelation, and it's really good. But it's also got some nice melodic, because there's a few mournful moments in there where Kirk is trying to get to grips with himself, and there's some very gentle motifs going on there as well to convey, you know, the pain, the inner turmoil of James as he's, you know, reconciling, you know, what he's lost, along with, you know, what's left of him, and I think it really lends to this episode and makes it much stronger. And one of my favourite scenes is actually earlier in the episode when Tiberius is still at large, and he's got the blood on his hand, and then arm coming out. I mean, it's massively theatrical, completely unreal. I mean, it's not natural, but it looks great. And the doors for the turbo lift doors close, and then out comes Kirk's hand like this, you know. And it's really, and it reminds me of like old school, you know, horror. You know, it's straight out of the kind of horror playbook.
Hammer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Universal.
Or Val Luton, or Universal. Yeah. And
it is that. Directed by Madonna's ex father-in-law.
No. Really?
Yes, yes. Sean Penn's dad did it.
No. Yeah, apropos nothing whatsoever. No. But yeah,
well, no, but the
top
director,
trivia.
But
yeah.
It was great direction.
It was great direction.
Actually, I think the direction in this it's really, like, there are some great scenes in there.
Yeah, like the close up of him when he's swigging back on, knocking back the brandy,
down,
and like walk skulking down there, and the music's blaring away.
I know,
it's really good.
That is brilliant. But there's also. There's also counterpoints to that, where you've got Kirk alone in the ready room, in turmoil, talking to Sulu in there, and he just sat in the big room at the end of a long empty table, saying, "Look, I've given everyone else the afternoon off.
I'm minding the store." That's great, because and it's good use of existing sets. Is that we want a big, give them a big room.
Yeah,
you know, there's a cheap set.
Yeah,
you know, it's a TV show.
Loads of empty seats around.
So we haven't got any big room to make him look lonely. So let's give him the conference room, where at least we've got empty seats. To convey that sense of isolation and loneliness that he's getting. And then from the other side of the room, you then Spock emerges and it kind of takes over. And I think that's why this episode is so forgivable. Is because I think its heart's genuinely in the right place, and it has some wonderful beats to it, some great moments, great scenes, very memorable scenes that work together. It's in a technical point of view, it's a very skillfully put together story. It's just
timing helps with this, I think. The fact that this is in the very, very early run in the first season really helps it out, because the enthusiasm of everyone involved really carries it through. If this is a second half, third season,
it's going to struggle.
Yeah.
But apart from anything else, it'd have a difficulty with the B plot, because by that point, shuttlecrafts have been established.
Yes.
But I suppose they could have just said, "Well, look,
you can always say some kind of cloud."
You could say, ion disturbance. We can't send down a shuttlecraft.
Yeah. Also, Scotty was a bit shit actually as chief. Chief engineer.
You've got it in for Scotty in this one,
haven't you? They don't. I mean, like, you know, you always know when Spock is operating the transporter, you know, they've said, take the afternoon off.
I'll handle this. Let Scotty go. I am genuinely the guy who does the transporter. I do this every day, and now you're getting this part-timer coming to do the really hard stuff. Like, what's going on? You know, that doesn't make any sense. Is there any other aspects of the Enemy Within which you guys had, which you wanted to just add, that you don't think we've covered?
No, I think we've done a very good job on this one, actually.
Mm. All right, then. Okie dokie, then. Well, in that case, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did enjoy this podcast, then why don't you share it on your social media thingies? Or if you're listening via Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever else, you know, give it a nice 5-star review. That would be very, very nice. If you want to engage with us, then just go to whompodsdestroy.com and you'll find links to our social channels. We only have one, actually. It's Twitter. So just go to whompodsdestroy on Twitter. And if you want to engage with us, then that would be lovely. And we'd be happy to discuss this episode on the socials in the usual convivial spirit of Star Trek discussion on Twitter. Or maybe not. Anyway, what we're going to do next time is we're going to carry on, because this was a big Shatner episode.
Yeah.
And we've decided, we think that we're going to, for our next episode, we're going to discuss Kirk, the character, and indeed, to an extent, Shatner, the actor. Not necessarily Shatner the man. I think we're going to leave that.
And the legend.
But we're going to have an episode in such the same way that we did. Our last episode was about Spock. We're going to have an all Kirk episode. So until then, from myself, Terry, and from Derek and from Graham, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.